Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guest and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. If you have any comments or questions you'd like to pose during the broadcast, you can email them to me at bonkay@aol.com. That's bonkaye@aol.com. Before I introduce my special guest for tonight, I just want to, first of all, wish everybody a very happy holiday season, or as happy as you can make it, because I know that it's not happy for all of us. And I address that in my December newsletter. If you haven't received a copy and you would like a copy, please write to me at bonkay@aol.com, and I'm happy to send it to you. Finding support and finding help during this period of time each year is so important, and that's why it's really important to reach out, find people who can help you, and I'm happy to provide that for you. While we're on that subject, I just want to make the announcement that we're now getting ready to send out notices about my upcoming healing weekend at the end of April. That will be near Washington, D.C., it's going to be a dynamite weekend, as they always are, where lots of friendships will be formed, lots of workshops will be going on, and you will walk out of there having a new frame of mind. And many of us need that as we go along the path of gay husband recovery, whether you're in the beginning, middle, or end stages, or even if you've recovered and you want to pay forward by helping other women, giving them hope and seeing that there is hope at the end of the tunnel. You'll be welcomed, and you'll be making new friends and people that will last for many years to come. So if you are interested in learning more about the Healing Weekend, you can write to me as well at bonkay@aol.com. or go onto my website at gayhusbands.com, and there's a link there to write to me when you want information. And if you go on my website at gayhusbands.com, be sure to look on the right-hand side for the Just Answer link. If you have any legal questions or medical questions, you get a free question to see how wonderful this service is. It's one that I use all the time for asking legal questions and medical questions for the lowest possible fee. If you're going through divorce and you know where you have to pay your lawyers $200 and $300 an hour, you can get all your preliminary work done here for $36 each month to ask 100 questions. They don't care how many you ask from professional lawyers or doctors in your area. So that's on my website at gayhusbands.com. Make sure you feel free to ask a question. The first question's free to see how much you appreciate that service. Tonight I have a wonderful guest who's returning, Kathy Holguin, a family therapist who's located in Orange County, California. And Kathy's been a member of our Straight Wives Network for the last few years, helping many, many women get through the whole issue as they're going through a gay husband recovery, the shock, the disbelief. How do I go on from here? The family situations, family therapy. And when you hear this broadcast and you see the information on here, you'll see Kathy's website. So if you want her to be your therapist, I will tell you this, that if I had to pick one therapist, if I needed to go for therapy in this whole country, Kathy would be my go-to person. And I mean that, Kathy. I think you're like the best therapist anybody could ask for, and I mean that. You know, you're always the first person I refer to because I've seen the best results come out of people working with you. So welcome back to the show, Kathy.
Thank you so much. That is so kind of you. Thank you, Bonnie.
I'm not being kind. I'm being honest. I mean, once again, it's so hard to find a therapist who can understand what we go through, who can understand the emotional impact this has on women, and you know from firsthand experience. Because you were there,
yes.
Correct?
I was there.
No, I think
yeah.
I think that nobody can understand this as well as somebody who's lived through it and recovered from it, about all of the different, you know, aspects of what you go through when it's time to recover from the situation. So maybe you could share a little bit about your story with our listeners.
Oh, I'd be glad to. Yeah, I was going to say, like, 18 years later, I found out that my husband, although he didn't admit it, was acting out in his same-sex relationships, unbeknownst to me. He was a pastor at a very large church in our local area that was home to me, and our family was the premier family. Everyone knew us and looked to us as being the model family, and very visible situation from all different angles. The fact that we had so many kids and we were very, you know, visible in our church with about 3,000 members at the time, and known in our community. And yeah, so it was huge, and I had to make some choices about how I wanted to live my life. And once I found out what was happening, and you know, going through all the same feelings of betrayal and shock and disbelief and thinking I was crazy, and you know, just it's such a unique type of betrayal in that the person that you marry is, their sexuality was never a question at the time that I chose to marry him. And so to find out something so basic and so foundational was all a lie was very, very disorganizing, to say the least.
And did you believe it at first? Was this something that you even suspected during your marriage?
No, not at all. He's 6'4", grew up on a farm, was very, like, everything I had sort of interpreted as, quote, masculine. I tell people an airplane could have landed in my living room, and I would have believed that before I would have believed that he was gay.
Because, you know, so many times women feel, have this feeling, Kathy, that people view them, and because people do view us as stupid, or how could we have missed it, or how come you couldn't see it? And, you know, it's not bad enough that we find out about it, but now on top of it, we're belittled by the public who feel like, how couldn't you see that? So I want, maybe you could address that.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because my oldest son said, you know, Mom, I mean, this is, now keep in mind, this is years later, right? But he said, this is like such a classic example of what you see like in the movies, you know, like the trusting wife who wouldn't have never guessed, and then lo and behold, right? And I absolutely had no idea after about 15 years of marriage when there was the first disclosure. At the time, I was pregnant with my twin, I'm sorry, with my third child. And so I was in so much shock and panic. I was 7 months pregnant. So I really, I couldn't allow myself to be around the people that were questioning my judgment and questioning my own ability to work through, you know, my my grief and my confusion. If they added to my confusion, I had to keep my distance because I was already literally going crazy. And so, it's kind of like the victim gets re-victimized all over again is what it felt like. And when even your own family of origin and your own sister and your parents and your best friend says, how did you not know? Yeah, it's very shaming and very, very wounding.
And I think that's one of the first things is that people question you. And I know that so many of our women really go through this, you know, as far as doubting themselves and why didn't they see it. But these guys are so good. Wouldn't you say so? I mean, so many of them have been practicing for years on how to fool people about being gay. And they learn how to imitate. They learn how to do the walk. They learn how to do the talk because, you know, they're growing up in a society where they don't want to be gay. So they're able to imitate a straight man. So it's easy for us because we're kind, loving women for the most part, you know, who believe in the goodness of people. Why would we think that a gay man would even want to marry us? We don't understand this. Would you say that's true?
Absolutely. It's completely outside the realm of our ability to reason because for that very reason, because we don't manipulate and lie and try to present to the world something that we're not. So I always say that the very best thing about us, categorically, is that, you know, the very best thing about us, which is our nurturing tendency, our ability to trust, our ability to commit, our ability to nurture and to be 100% dedicated to someone and to our fault in some respects, that's used against us. It's like the primary weapon is used against you. And it's very, very confusing. And I think that's a lot of what I kind of help bring to the table in terms of my own work is that I kind of help people get a better footing and a better perspective about who they are and what they're capable of, apart from the crazy, disorganized kind of confusion that we live in day to day.
And also, I think we're confused about homosexuality because we're socialized to believe or we're brought up to believe that people who are gay want to go with people of the same sex. Why would they be looking for somebody who's straight? And we grow up with a certain stereotype that we see on television or in the movies. I know, you know, I'm a little bit older than you. Okay, a lot older. But anyway, when I was growing up, you know, I used to see people in television in the movies like Paul Lynde, who was, you know, gay, or Charles Nelson Reilly, who was gay. And they acted gay. You know, they were feminine in their way and in their speech. So you could kind of pick them out, and you thought that's what gay is, you know, that stereotypical image. But that's not who these guys are. These guys don't want to be that image. Those guys are hiding from being gay. So they're making sure that that's not how they talk, that's not how they walk. You know, in fact, many of them are, you know, somewhat homophobic or anti-gay in their conversation and speech. And mm-hmm. so you're never really suspicious of this. I know I certainly mm-hmm. wasn't. Were you at all?
No, not at all. Not at all. And for me, in my circle of friends and in my community, like, that wasn't even an issue. I mean, maybe it is even more so today, but, you know, 15, 18 years ago, you know, I didn't even have any kind of sort of awareness or any kind of interfacing with the gay community at all. So you're right. Everything that I would have perceived as being gay would have been something I would have seen, you know, on TV or, you know, the very typical stereotypes. And so there were other missing links now that I look back that I'm aware of, but that is not something you're going to have an awareness in looking forward if you're in the midst of the situation or you're just in that sort of trauma state and you're in that, you know, you're shocked. And there's no way for you to know if, you know, I mean, why would you know? I mean, there's this man says that he loves you, he hugs you, he kisses you, he holds your hand, he courts you, you know, he wants you to be his wife. Why would you ever suspect that he's, you know, that he wants to have sex with men? I mean, that's not even something that you would be able to wrap your head around.
Exactly, and plus you have children with them. You know, it's not that they couldn't have sex with you. Maybe mm-hmm. it wasn't the best sex, but, you know, certainly enough sex mm-hmm. to produce children. And I think that throws us off, too, because we're taught that gay people with straight people, right?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So
yeah.
That really throws you off also.
Right, and it's very interesting because in my case, and I've shared this a little bit, is that we had a really active sex life. I know there are many situations where that is not the case, but that even added more to my confusion because uh-huh. that seemed to be regular. It seemed to be satisfying, and so that kind of even shows you it kind of like heightened. It was a different level of confusion for me because there wasn't even any indicator on that level as well. So, like I said, an airplane could have landed in my living room and I would have been less surprised.
And that's what I think women have to know, that there's not, I mean, there's a prototype of the gay husband that we talk about, that I write about, but certainly there are mm-hmm. exceptions to all of the prototypes. I mean, in Kathy's case, you know, her husband having sex was no problem. And I have other women who tell me the same thing. You know, mm-hmm. other people do have problems, but sometimes that's not the telltale sign. Sometimes people mm-hmm. say, well, there's some emotional distance there, but that could be for many reasons because these men are really good at coming up with stories. They're under pressure at work. They're on medication. You know, they have a lot going on. And, of course, the old story, which is usual, which so many women tell me and probably you, that their husbands say, well, in the beginning of every relationship, there's a lot of sex, but then things change. And, you know, it's not the same anymore. You have work pressures. You have children. You can't be expecting to have sex all the time. And that's not how people are, you know, straight people as well. So that kind of sounds like a good explanation, right? One
yeah,
that we could believe.
Right. And you know, when you're in a situation, especially if you haven't had a lot of sexual history or sexual experience, how are you supposed
uh-huh.
to know what's normal? How are you supposed to know what to expect and what not to expect, right?
Uh-huh.
So, again, you know, it brings you back to that questioning of your own wants, needs, and desires, and what is it that's important to you and why? I think sometimes we get so caught up in the fact that love hopes all things, that we love this person. And so we think, well, if we just keep hoping, if we just keep holding on, then surely it will turn at some point. And if you don't know what you're really dealing with at a person's core sense of their sexual identity and who they are, you're going to hold on to that shred of hope or that little like glimmer because you love this person and you want this person to be in your life for whatever reason, even if your needs aren't being met. And so I always tell women, you know, pay attention to what it is that you want and you need and allow that to matter. Allow that to have some voice in, you know, at the end of the day, instead of acquiescing to the excuses and everything that he's trying to feed you.
Even though sex may not have been an issue in your marriage, were there other gaps that you couldn't pin on homosexuality at that time, but as time went on that it started to make sense?
Yes. Oh, yes. And that's the thing I was talking about, like when you look back. Like, he had a really he didn't have the ability to connect emotionally with our kids. So he would always find other things to do, he would always blame it on work, or, you know, he was so important that he had to be at all the different events, and there was very little ability to interface with our kids, and we had 5 kids. So it's interesting because our oldest, he was able to establish more of a relationship with him, I think, than any of my other kids, but I think that the acting out behaviors increased as time went on. And that was really evident in terms of our family life and how much he was willing to even just be around when it came to, you know, family events, baseball games, you know, taking kids to school. Then he became less and less and less responsible for just, you know, just the daily needs that we had as a family, down to the point where even making money was an issue, paying the bills on time was an issue. Like, he got less and less invested on every single level of our lives as he became more and more entrenched in that lifestyle.
And did he have an excuse for you when he was doing that, when you would question him?
Oh, yes. Well, you know, the excuse was I was too demanding. And if I just understood what his life was like. And, you know, that's where I'm saying, as I look back, I was more able to kind of tell sort of what the thinking process was, because a lot of that kind of stuff didn't make any sense to me. I thought, well, no, we're working together to provide, you know, a roof over the head for our kids. And, you know, and I'll never forget, Bonnie, that you're going to laugh, and a lot of the women are just going to be like, oh, yeah, I know this well. But I had just delivered my twins. So at this point, I had 2 newborns, a 2-year-old, how old was he? A 6-year-old and an 8-year-old at home. And he said, honey, I just found a job for you. You know, because I was the one that was going to bring home more money so that he could have his lifestyle. Yeah. Amazing, huh?
Really amazing.
Mm-hmm.
So when you actually found out, you know, how did you absorb that at first?
Oh, my. So I found out when I was, as I said, 7 months pregnant with my 3rd child. I went into shock. Completely, I went into shock. I had no feeling state at all. All of my emotions became buried. I started to think about how I was. I just went into survival mode. Really, I didn't process it on a emotional level for myself until some weeks after that. But when I first discovered it, like I said, because I was so shocked, my whole world ended. Everything just crashed. And because we had such a public job and such a public, everybody knew who we were, and I had to be really careful about who I told and what was going on. So I felt very alone, very isolated. I didn't have the ability to just go to my best friend or go to my parents because I was very unhealthy at the time, and I just felt like I needed to protect him and his secret before taking care of myself and my needs and my children. And so I held that secret for about, I had my son, and then we went to counseling, and we thought, okay, everything will be okay. And then I held the secret for about 4 years until
wow.
he became active again, like very, very active.
Mm-hmm.
And at the second time, I think he just knew that I would stay with him no matter what. And we had had twins. We had had two more children 2 years after that. So that was about a 4-year time frame of just being in hell and very alone and very isolated.
Now, did you think during that time that he had actually stopped acting on it?
Yes. Yes. I think part of the best part about me is once I set a goal, I'm able to accomplish that goal. And at the time, my goal was, I'm going to keep this family together no matter what. I can fix any problem
uh-huh.
that comes our way. He was telling me everything I wanted to hear, and I wanted to believe
uh-huh.
it. So I created a family that I wanted. And his behaviors began to get so much more out of control. And then we had two more kids, right? So... and then he would do things like, hey, I found a job for you, honey, after you just had twins. So it became less and less manageable for me. And I started to get angry, which I think was the first step toward me healing and getting better. And I began
uh-huh.
to set boundaries. And that didn't go over so well with him. But I was willing to risk upheaval and willing to risk conflict to start to take care of myself.
I think also that it's really encouraging to hear you say these words, because many of us, after we even know or find out, it's not like we're putting our heads in the sand. We're just hoping against
mm-hmm.
hope, because we don't understand
mm-hmm.
homosexuality, that these things, this problem will go away, because our husbands who, once we do find out, are saying, look, I'll do anything I can to make sure this doesn't happen again. You know, I love
right.
you and the family. That's what comes first to me. And these are the
right.
words we want to hear. None of us want to hear, well, you know, guess what? You want to leave, leave. You know, it is what it is.
Right.
You know, that's not what
right.
we're hearing. We're hearing, oh, thank goodness he's going to work with us. I'm going to be a better wife than
yes.
ever. Those feelings are going to go away. He won't even be able
yeah.
to think about men. He'll be so busy with the family. I mean, I was like that too. You know, I thought, oh, I don't want to break up my family. You know, I'll just
yeah.
be a better wife. I'll just try harder. You know, I won't
mm-hmm.
put so much pressure on him. You know, I made all kinds
yeah.
of deals that just never seemed to work out. But I think that we always, in our own minds, negotiate what can we live with. And as long as we don't have to face what it really is. And once again, it's easy to do that. Because when they're telling you, nope, it's never going to happen again, and I don't know why I did that, but I feel terrible, and you know I love you, and it was just a moment of weakness, and I won't be having them again, it does sound really good, right?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And keep in mind, you know, it's like this is something that he's known about and lived with for, at this point in my situation, what, 15 years, and way before that, before I had met him. But after being married
mm-hmm.
for 15 years, being this secret for even before that time, he knew how to live this duality, right? He knew how to live in both worlds. And,
uh-huh.
And so he just expected that I would be willing and learn how to live in both worlds with him, I think. And I think a lot of women try to figure out if they're capable of doing that. I remember thinking, well, can I live with him and just have him be my roommate and my friend? And is that better for my kids? Because at this point, I wasn't focused on anything that was good for me or my level of satisfaction or ever having sex again with anybody. And it was more about how can I do the best thing on behalf of my children? And I realized that my kids were watching what kind of relationship I was modeling for them. And kids, it's empirically proven that kids that grow up in these circumstances, a lot of them have a lot of anxiety issues because they feel, they can kind of feel the temperature in the house. They pick up on the emotions on a very subconscious level. And a lot of the kids I work with that have these kinds of dynamics, they have a lot of anxiety. And so I think I wasn't doing my kids any favors either because I was modeling something for them that wasn't going to be in their best interest for sure, and definitely not in mine.
And I think that's really the bottom line. I know that many women say, well, it's better to, you know, stay with this until the kids are grown. And I'm really sorry, I don't agree with that in almost all cases, not in every single case, but as an overall general rule. That, and not just with a gay husband, but with any destructive or toxic marriage. You know, the ones that suffer the most are the children. They know when you're hurting. They know when something's not right. They know when something's, you know, not making any sense. They personally take the blame for that because when you're fighting each other, you know, the children are usually somewhere in that mix. Oh, you're not doing enough with the kids. You're not doing this. So, you know, they're not hearing the real issues. You know, they're just hearing the fight going on and then personalizing that they're part of that problem. And I know that that's how I grew up. My brother grew up. You know, when my parents would fight and I didn't have a gay father, I had, you know, two straight parents, but the impact was the same. You know, we took responsibility for our parents' unhappiness. And in these marriages where you can just feel that something's wrong and that you see your mother crying because of the fact, you know, like women say, oh, I put on a happy face for my kids. They don't know. Tell them, talk about that.
Everybody
knows, right?
Yeah, everybody knows. The kids always know. They can't maybe put their finger on it, but they always know. And I always tell people the best gift you can give your children is truth. And I'm not talking about overwhelming kids with information that they're not ready to hear in terms of what's appropriate developmentally, but helping your kid, and I do a lot of this kind of rehearsing in my practice, helping kids, helping moms have the conversation with kids. Because, first of all, the kids are not going to trust you if you're not honest with them. So if the kids know that you're going to be honest with them, even if it's information that it's hard to hear, they at least know that they can trust you to give them the information and give you the fact and give you the truth. And secondly, it's not your motivation. Most of these of us, of the parents that I know, their motivation is never to throw dad under the bus, but in an effort to protect dad and not speak truth, you're actually you're degrading the relationship with your child and actually doing damage because you're creating something in them that makes it difficult for them to trust themselves. So they know something's wrong. They don't understand it. Mom is saying, no, 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 everything's fine. Dad is saying, no, 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 everything's fine. So what does the kid think? Well, there's something wrong with me. So you're actually contributing to certain types of pathologies by having the kid question his own reality. And so you have, so you have to understand it's you are doing your child a disservice by pretending, because you teach your child how to pretend, and then you also teach them they can't trust what's going on in terms of their own interpretation of events and people and surroundings. And that's not a good place to be.
The other thing is this, that, you know, over the years, certainly my points of view have changed from, you know, when I first started out, because society was different back then. Back in the 1980s, people view things very differently than they do today. But I truly do believe that secrets destroy families. When you have this kind of secret that you're keeping, And yes. Children find out some other way, because we've had children who are part of our network who found out on the computer. They found their mm-hmm. father's porno, and they would confront mm-hmm. their father, and the father would say, well, if you tell your mother, it's going to break up the family. You know, the children mm-hmm. become the keeper of the secret, which is very, very mm-hmm. damaging to them. They feel terrible mm-hmm. guilt, you know, that they're hiding something this big from their mother. And yet they feel like if they say anything and the family breaks apart, that will be their fault. So you put your children through that. And also the other issue that I wanted to mention was that we're giving a bad message about gay, and that if we have to keep gay a secret, then it sounds like there must be something wrong with it. And a lot mm-hmm. of the children that come from straight gay marriages, a lot of us had gay children. And mm-hmm. these children are never going to come to terms with themselves if they think that there's something wrong with gay. And mm-hmm. then they're going to go through the same kind of suffering that their fathers went through in trying to keep this a secret. And I think yeah. that I've seen this happen in families where, you know, I've had women tell me that, you know, they know their, you know, their children come to them crying about being gay, but, you know, the fathers are trying to keep it a mm-hmm. secret so they can't tell the kids. You know, all these bad things happen. No good comes from this. And, you know, right. sometimes if you're gay, it doesn't have to be a sexual thing. You know, you can make it totally non-sexual, just a different way of living, different kinds of attractions without getting into any kind of sexual content. But I think that mm-hmm. this kind of news needs to be told by both parents when possible. But keeping these secrets, they get out. And then if you have to find out from somebody else, or your kid finds out from someone else, you know, that's even 10 times worse, wouldn't you say so?
Yeah, and that is just such a dicey thing, right? Because you want to teach your children to love both parents, and you want to always give uh-huh. them permission to love both parents. And that's, I understand that is so hard to do when you're angry and you're betrayed and you're uh-huh. confused. Right. And so being able to help your child, first of all, learn how to love themselves regardless, and then how to uh-huh. love each other and love in terms of siblings, and then to love both mom and both dad. And teaching uh-huh. children that everybody is full of good and bad parts, all of us. Regardless uh-huh. of if it's a sexuality or if it's lying or if it's, you know, whatever it is. And so I think helping children learn the value of love and loving each other and loving themselves, this is a great way to teach kids that lesson. And it's okay to teach your child that you can be angry and you can still love someone, right? You can be mad as, I don't know if I can say the word, hell.
There you can. Mm-hmm.
There you go.
Fine.
But you
say whatever you like.
You can be spitting mad and still want and still love someone. It's possible to have both. And that's where that grieving process comes in, and that's partly why it's so confusing. Because one minute we love this person, the next minute we can't stand the sight of them. And you know, and that's just the human condition. That's just how all of us are, regardless of whatever circumstance we're in. And I think that being able to teach your child, you know what, I want to talk about sexuality apart from the way dad has expressed himself and the choices he's made, right? And being mm-hmm. able to delineate between the two. And being able to say that, you know, sweetie, we all have good and bad parts. And I'm not saying that your sexuality is a bad part of you, but I can say that dad's choice and how he chose to act out his sexuality is a bad part of him because it hurt us and it betrayed us. So making those distinctions, I think, is really, really important.
Well, I think it's also important for women before they announce this news. I mean, sometimes I put the blame on the gay husbands because when they're ready to go, they're ready to go. You know, and yeah. it's like when they come to me and they say, I need your help, I need your advice, how am I going to tell my wife? And 9 out of 10 times it's because they've met someone, and I understand that. And they want to do the least amount of damage and get out of the marriage as quickly as possible because they must think I have some kind of magic wand that can make it happen. But I always tell mm-hmm. them that it's going to be difficult. It's going to take time. You've had a lifetime to deal with this. Your wife is just finding out that her whole world, as she knows it, is going to be destroyed at that particular moment. And it's going
right.
to take time for her to first absorb the news, get over it. And they expect within 2 weeks, well, why isn't she over it? Because they're ready to go. But the point
right.
is that I work with the men on those issues, but with the women, it's really important not to do things in anger when it comes to the children. Because I have
right.
had women who have said to me, well, you know, they just blurted out to their kids, well, guess what? Your father is this, your father's that. That's why this marriage is breaking up. And it's,
right.
you know, I understand their anger and their frustration, which is why I tell them, call me. You want to be,
yeah.
I'll listen to you. But don't be
right.
doing this in front of your kids. You can't take back those words. And it should be done in a way with, you know, once you have to absorb it and understand it, you know, give yourself that time so that you can tell them in a way that's understanding without it being something that's horrible. Because once again, then you're just creating the same pattern all over again. And I know it's
right.
hard. That's why I say, you know, a lot of times I used to bite my tongue. It would be swelling up in my mouth. I was biting so hard because I wanted to say things. But
yeah,
and that's how I felt. But, you know, for the sake of my children, I just didn't do it because I didn't want to hurt them. And I think maybe you can explain this as a therapist. I always say children are made up of two parents. And, you know, they know that growing up they love both their mother and their father. And if something's wrong with their father or their mother, you know, they internalize that there's a part of them that's something wrong. So that's why I think
exactly.
it's so important to have good positive imagery as much as possible about the other parent, regardless of how you feel. Do you agree with that or no?
Exactly. I think it's really important to be able to distinguish whose feeling states you're talking about, right? So if your child is talking about a parent in a positive light and they have a good interaction or they feel like, you know, fulfilled in some way, being able to help validate that kid's feelings, right? So, you know, and that's, wow, he really made you feel special, or he really took some time with you, or he really, like, you really felt valuable in that moment, right? Because what you're doing is you're helping that child learn emotional language. You're helping that child develop a vocabulary that maybe they don't have. They know the feeling, but they can't put the words to it. And it works the opposite way as well. So, wow, you felt really belittled or felt kind of marginalized or you felt hurt or you felt sad. If a child knows that you're going to really be a good listener and not be projecting your own experiences and your own hurt and your own sadness and anger onto them, they're not going to absorb it. And so you have to be very
uh-huh.
careful to own your stuff. But let them have the freedom to come to you and be able to process with you. And I think a lot of times we get mixed up in the value, that how valuable and critical that is. Because what's going to happen is that the child is going to grow up and develop their own relationship with dad. And I would say 9.9% of the time, that relationship is dissatisfying. For whatever reason,
uh-huh.
most of the time, and or maybe they're just the ones that come into my office. I don't know. Maybe there are
maybe.
Good ones
yeah.
out there, and that's probably the case. But what you're doing is you're providing a pathway and a emotional support so that when things are disappointing, they can come to you, and they know that the conversation gets to be about them, not about you.
Uh-huh.
I always caution parents: be careful. Not to create, and this sounds kind of, I don't know, kind of tacky, but a situation where there's not any emotional incest going on. And what I mean by that is that so that the child is not taking care of the parent. You don't want a child taking care of a parent. I don't care if it's an adult child or a small child. Parents need to take care of themselves.
I absolutely agree with you.
And take care of their own needs and wants and desires. It is not up to a child to make a parent feel okay. And I'm constantly working with adult children who think it's their job to take care of the parent because they've been ostracized, minimized, they've lost support. And I really, as best I can, is try to let that parent off, that child off the hook, because it is not their job to take care of a grown parent who has made choices and has had certain consequences follow them.
Do many of the children that you work with, as they get older, do they suffer from feelings of guilt at all? Do they feel a sense of responsibility, even though it's not rational,
yeah,
because
you know,
of the fact that...
Again, it goes, and I just use my own children kind of as a, you know, foundation. Like, the ones who are a little more caretaking and nurturing naturally tend to fall into
mm-hmm.
that. So they have to be taught and they have to work a little harder to not get caught up into that dynamic. You know, people who are a little more individuated and a little more compartmentalized, like, they don't have as hard of a time with it. And so, yeah, I mean, it's a constant battle to be focused on what's good and healthy and to be very aware of what's not good for you. And, you know, honestly, I didn't model that so well. You know, I put up with a lot of stuff that wasn't good for me for everybody else's sake. And so I modeled some of that, so I take responsibility for some of that.
One of the things that you mentioned that I think is so important is the fact that children model themselves after their parents' relationship, that what you
mm-hmm.
know and what you see is what you do. And that's why I tell
mm-hmm.
women it's so important. You know, when people say to me, when they first come to me, what do you think I should do? Should I leave or should I stay? And I say to them very simply, I tell them to try this little trick. Think about your daughter. I know you love your daughter more than anybody in the world. That's your number one concern. And they don't have a daughter.
Mm-hmm.
I tell them, think about your sister. And I say,
mm-hmm.
if they came to you and said, Mom, I'm marrying a man who's just like Dad, what would you tell them mm-hmm. to do? Would you say congratulations
mm-hmm.
or would you tell them to turn around and run? And when
mm-hmm.
they always tell me I would tell them to run, I say, well, if it's not good enough for your child, why is it good enough for you? Because
right.
children are going to just repeat what they see in your household. And if they see
right.
that you're willing to put up with so much, then they're going to think that's what their job is. And no matter how
right.
unhappy you seem while you're putting up with it, this is what they learn. This is what our learned behavior is. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. And that, in a nutshell, is what we do when we do psychotherapy, right? We go back to understanding, where did you internalize certain behaviors, certain messages? Where did you come up with
uh-huh.
certain thinking patterns that made sense to you that would allow this behavior to be okay? Or where did you learn to trust somebody who maybe wasn't as trustworthy, but you interpreted those behaviors as being trustworthy? And there is always a link back to our family of origin, right? Because that's our blueprint. That's what gets embedded and impressed on our hearts and on our lives, right?
Uh-huh.
And we become, and then as you begin to realize that a lot of trauma has been sort of leaked into your life, you begin to try to make sense of it and try to organize yourself around it. And so we come up with narratives. We come up with stories that we tell ourselves. And you know, we kind of say, yeah, this is okay or this is not okay. So a lot of that work is just sort of rethinking and revisiting some of those old recordings and old messages. And it's not hard to do because your psyche has that information. You have all the information
uh-huh.
you need to answer some of your own questions. It's just a matter of getting there.
And I think that's what it is, that this is a process, and that's why I feel you've been to a few of our healing weekends, and don't you feel they're valuable as far as moving along?
Oh, my gosh. Yes, 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 yes. If you're even thinking about going, go. Like, buy the ticket and make it happen. I'm actually buying
uh-huh.
coming in April. Oh, for sure. So, yeah,
oh, I can't tell you how excited I am.
Oh, I am so excited, and I'm trying to get Heather to come too, who is my colleague, who is also a straight wife, and who's also a therapist. So, I can't even put it into words. You can hear how excited I am. because
it is exciting. It's exciting to see women who felt so isolated and so alone all of a sudden unite in this situation and feel like, now I know that I'm not crazy. What I was feeling was perfectly normal. And, you know, since you're coming, I'm going to be expecting you to do a workshop with the women. And, you know, I know they always feel so much better after you talk.
And creating, I have to say, I have never been in a situation where there is such a safe, secure environment in which to be able to process what's going on for you. Nobody, like, beats anybody up. Nobody tells anybody else what to do. It is the safest, most protected sort of environment you can be in to be processing and in the midst of this kind of trauma. And I say trauma with a capital T because sometimes you don't know if you're coming or going. And so to be in this kind of venue where there's this shared experience, it is frightening, it is terrible, it's not a club anybody else wants to be in, but you will emerge a better, more, you will have a satisfied life. And life will move on. It will move forward. And this can be a huge turning point for sure, no doubt.
Yes, it seems to have made a difference for so many women who keep returning, you know, because they feel that each time they come back, they get stronger. Some people have been there 4, 5, even 6 times because now they're, you know, paying forward now that they've done some of their healing.
Yeah.
But I really think there's so much residual scarring in these situations that this is not a quick fix or something that in a year or 5 years or 10 years you're going to forget about. You know, depending on how long you've been in a damaging situation, the longer you've been there, the longer it takes to, you know, manage all of this. And one of the nice things that we talk about, you know, some of us have started over. I've started over. You have a wonderful husband. You know, it gives hope to women that if they're looking for positive relationships, that they're certainly out there, but, you know, we still struggle, even with our wonderful relationships, with some of the baggage of the past. Am I right in saying that?
Absolutely. Yep. And, you know, we're so complicated. You know, we are. And relationships are complicated. But, yeah, I mean, you can be fine 1 minute, and then the next minute something comes up and you get triggered, and it could be something that was 20 years old. Right? Today, just today, my daughter and I found a bunch of ornaments that my ex-sister-in-law had made for us in 1985. And, yeah, I mean, I had an emotional reaction to that. And I thought, wow, you know, some of this stuff, it just lingers and you don't know. But I say celebrate any kind of emotional reaction because if you're having an emotional response to something, it shows that you're healthy, period. Because you don't want to be
shut down. You have to remember a lot of this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that you would concur that we suffer a lot from post-traumatic stress from these relationships, because many of them were abusive on an emotional level or a physical level or both. And just trying to get past that, you know, when somebody reacts a certain way, it brings you back to that moment, you know, when you were being abused. And so many of us do suffer from, you know, post-traumatic stress. And that's why therapy is so important, which is why, you know, look, I have a lot of therapists who come on here, Kathy, and I don't say this about any of the other ones. They're wonderful. I love them, all of them. But I'm telling you the truth. If I had to go to a therapist, you would be the therapist I would go to because no one does what you do. No one can get you to the next stage like you can. I see it happening with women all the time. And the best thing is that you don't even have to live in Orange County, California. You can do this through Skype or by phone. Am I correct in saying that?
Yeah.
To do therapy with you?
Skype, FaceTime,
time, yeah, we'll make it happen.
Yeah, I however you want it to happen.
This is my passion.
Kathy has worked with women from all over the country, so you can be anywhere and work with her and really see, you can take back your life. So when people hear this broadcast, I'll have your website on there, and it's www.kholequinntherapy.com, which is a lot of stuff to have to spell out. So, as soon as the show is over, I'm going to put it on the broadcast page so that when people are listening to this, they can see it and just cut and paste it from there. And, once again, hopefully hook up with you, in conversation and see what you can do for them. Because you've done amazing work with either the family, with the children, with the women and the children to get to the next phase, the next stage. And you're just a remarkable therapist. I mean, I've heard raving reviews on how wonderful you are. But I already knew that.
I'm so glad.
So I like to take credit for, being your fan club here, the president of it. So we're looking forward to our healing weekend at the end of April. I told the women at the beginning, we'll be sending out notices by the end of this month, giving you all the information, the link to the site. And the wonderful thing about the healing weekend, look at it as a vacation to restart your life, because you will be having a lot of laughs, a lot of tears, but a lot of friendships will be made. But most importantly, you'll be walking away with a lot of good knowledge on how to proceed for, the next years of your life, and you'll have a lot of support. And the last one we had in Philadelphia was just so incredible, and we were very blessed to have Kristen Calabrese there. She's our new spokesperson who really knows how to stand up for straight wives, and her messages are incredible. And, we had Pamela Adams-Griffith, who's health coach, really help us, and we're going to have some wonderful speakers at this one as well. So I'm really excited about it, and it's going to be where we were before at a beautiful hotel, very affordable, and I think that we really had a great time that time you were last there.
Awesome.
So any other final words you'd like to say before we're out of time, which went so fast tonight, and I appreciate you so much coming.
I would just say your life is not over. It is just beginning, and I love every one of you. Makes me cry.
Yeah, and you know what? I love our women, too, and I'm so sorry that we have to go through such sad times during the holiday period. And this is the best time you can treat yourself to a session or two with Kathy, because a lot of times just having that person to lead you through during these, times when everybody else is celebrating and you just feel like breaking down and crying, the healthiest thing you can do is get the right kind of help. So once again, if you have any questions, email me at bondk@aol.com or look on here in a few moments. You'll be seeing Kathy's email address or her website address, and you can write directly to her on her beautiful website. So, Kathy, I want to thank you so much for coming back on, and hopefully we can do this every, few months with some good new advice for women.
Of course.
You know that I love you.
I love you.
And
big hugs.
A big hug, and I'll give you a big one in person soon.
Okay.
All right, so good night to all of our listeners. We'll be back next week. Have a wonderful week. Good night.
Good night.